The Fire Store, equipping protectors with passion. Every decision the Fire Store makes as a company is about its customers. As the holiday season has quickly approached, explore a wide selection of unique and practical gifts at the Fire Store's Gift Center. Find the perfect presents for firefighters, EMTs, and first responders today. The Fire Store's goal is to get you the gear you need, when you need it, at prices you can afford. Visit thefirestore.com for everything but the truck and shop its family of brands including Streamlight, MSA, Lion, FLIR, and more.
Breathing in diesel exhaust fumes is like walking into a fire without a mask. Over time, those toxins lead to cancer. Protect yourself with MagnaGrip, the easiest, most reliable exhaust removal system that features a true 100% seal to eliminate diesel exhaust fumes. To get free grant assistance, visit MagnaGrip.com.
I'm sorry, I was grooving to the music. Sorry about that. What's up, Tommy boy? How you doing?
We're on the back step, buddy.
We are, man. Hey, this is Ronnie K, the good-looking guy with the big mustache. I got the little mustache. That's Tommy A out in New Mexico. I'm here in New York. It's getting chilly here, brother. We had frost on the old pumpkin this week.
We're getting toward that. This morning was the first time I had to scrape ice off the windshield.
Ah, here it comes.
Yeah, right. So get ready.
Yeah, what are they predicting for your neck of the woods for the winter?
It depends on who you listen to. It's either going to be Armageddon or Snowmageddon.
Or Snowmageddon.
In the 50-degree range again.
Okay. Yeah, I think Farmers Almanacs said we're in for a whopper, and I think the National Weather Service agrees with them. So it's all part of this El Nino, La Nina, and all the rest of the kids running around making bad weather. So, yeah, it is what it is. I always say that's why God invented four-wheel drive.
Yeah.
You know? let it be so. Let it be so. What can I tell you, man?
I know you drive into the city every day, but have you got access to mass transit?
Yeah, I do actually. The Metro North Railroad runs up into Westchester County. The station's about probably 2 miles from here. You know, Fran and I went in on a railroad twice. She got me on a railroad like twice. That's it. I'm not a train guy. We took the railroad. We had to go to a hospital in Manhattan. So let's take the railroad. Okay. So she loves the train. So Metro North from Northern Westchester down through the Bronx into Harlem. It's the Harlem line, they call it. And then we got off at 42nd Grand Central Station. It was as crowded as Grand Central Station. Okay. So again, you got out, you got to try to get a cab. There's a line to get a cab at Grand Central. So you wait online. Then we take that to the hospital. None of this was cheap. That was from we couldn't park it at the train station because you need a monthly permit. So we took a taxi from the house to the train, took the train, bought the round trip tickets, the cab up to the hospital, back from the hospital, lunch, back, blah blah blah. It's a $300 day. It was like, no, wow. We're not doing this anymore. Like, the round trip tickets were like 40 or 50 a piece, and it's like no. I like the privacy of my car. I don't have to smell anybody's ass and none of that stuff. You know, I'm not a train guy. So, but I do have access. But if I went to work that way, it would take me like twice as long as it taking me in the car.
Huh.
Yeah, because I'd have to go down again to Grand Central, then get a regular subway train, which I'm not going on in New York City, and take that from Manhattan all the way down into Brooklyn and then walk. Nah, it's a big nah for me. Okay, so I just keep fixing the car. That's all. We did a transmission 2 months ago. We did a starter 2 weeks ago. You'd be happy to hear. We got flatbed at home on a Saturday because my starter went. The starter had two starts left in it. It got us to the mall from the house and then from the mall to the restaurant for lunch on a Saturday. We came out, done. So called AAA and waited for the big flatbed to come and we put a new starter in there. Ironically, I work with a guy who loves my rig. And he says, I'm a used car guy. When you're ready to get rid of it, I want your truck.
Huh.
So every few weeks I come and tell him what his next used car is being rebuilt. I says, hey, by the way, your next used car got a new transmission. Your next used car got a new starter. He says, great. Keep replacing all that shit before you give it to me. So he's kind of happy about that. So I guess, Dad, I have something to start, but if you want to start, by all means.
Yeah, we were talking before we got on the air about historical fires, and I had mentioned to you that documentary I just saw. Actually, Billy G had it posted up on Firefighter Close Calls, and it's called Angels Too Soon. And it's on the Lady of the Angels fire in Chicago that happened in December of 58. And Ron, you were telling me you just read a book on that. And I'm curious as to how the book was.
It was incredible. It's an incredibly sad story. It's called To Sleep with the Angels. See if I have it, if I threw it up on this shelf over here. Yes, I can hold it up for the viewing audience. I'm just kind of a half a fire historian, but I think all of us at all capacities in the fire service have to know and understand the historical fires and the significance they've had on the fire service codes and all the rest of the stuff. This is the book, Sleep with the Angels, The Story of a Fire. Okay. And it's incredibly sad. 95 people got killed, 92 children, between first and sixth grade, and, three nuns that worked at the school, and so what comes from that, is there's no more open wooden stairwells in schools anymore. There are fire alarms. Modern schools have sprinklers. They do fire drills once a month, all this other stuff. So, those hard lessons learned from the past. So if you're any kind of into any fire history geek like myself, To Sleep with the Angels, I got two shelves full of books like this. And that's the shame of the whole thing. I have two shelves of books just like this. We were talking before off the air, the Collinwood School Fire in 1908 in Cincinnati. And I mean, the list is forever. It's the Station Nightclub and Beverly Hills Supper Club in Kentucky in 77. And the thing about Lady of Angels, the Collinwood School in 1908 and this one in 58, it's almost the same story. The building, open wooden staircases, transoms over the door. And the fire ran through it, taking everything with it. So I urge all of our people, all of our fire service people, take an interest in the historic fires that happened, not just in your neighborhood, but all over the country. From what I'm gathering,
that was kind of something that we were taught coming up of that this fire was really the driving force of revamping code enforcement in schools.
Every school system in the country stopped, and they did inspections on every school in the United States after this fire. They weren't paying too much attention to it. Don't forget also in 1908 at the Collinwood fire, there was no national media. It was in and around the Cincinnati area, and that's it. It never really made it across the country. But in 58, by that time, television is alive and well, to have networks and people and newspapers, and they can get the story out. So this was the one. Lady of the Angels is the one that talked about combustible construction in schools and open wooden stairwells and all that stuff that contributed to the windowsills were too high. The kids were little. They couldn't jump up on a windowsill to either try to jump even into the firemen's nets once the fire department got there, because they were too little and they couldn't reach the window. So a lot of stuff. Again, the transom window over the doorway, for ventilation, in a hot summer day as school's winding down in June. But the fire came right through those windows into the classroom. So tough lessons learned. But you have to kind of understand your fire history a little bit. To know where we are now. It's my old saying, you can't know where you're going till you know where you've been.
I was surprised, and I haven't read that book, but it's definitely on the to-do list. But the documentary went into the fact that there was a 13-year-old that confessed to starting that fire. There was...
He was in the school at the time. He wasn't looked at for that. But when he moved to another town outside of Chicago, they had a series of small fires and he got caught.
Yeah, Cicero was where he wound up.
Yeah. So as the detective spoke to him and they gave him a lie detector and all this other stuff, they put two and two together. And so, where'd you live in 1958? Well, we lived in Chicago. What school did you go to? Well, Lady of the Angels. Then all of a sudden, you know, their jaws dropped and they put two and two together and they believe, you know, that he knew the layout of the basement of the school. It started in the basement, you know, in the boiler room in the janitor's area. They actually held the janitor, the townspeople held the janitor accountable.
Yeah, I remember reading that part about it somewhere.
Yeah, that guy, he kind of lost the rest of his life. He didn't lose his life, but he actually was, according to the book, according to the story, he helped. He was a few blocks away at another Catholic school because he kind of had two or three buildings to take care of and was coming back and ran to the building and tried to get the kids out. And the townspeople blamed him. They shunned this guy. And he just died of a broken heart eventually, this guy. It was pretty bad. And then years later, they caught up with this other kid who was like a sixth grader at the time. And they realized it was probably him. So, yeah, it's a tragic story. But, when I read it, it was like reading the book from 1908, the same story, same fire, you know, traveled up the wooden stairs. The kids were trapped, blah, blah, blah. So lessons learned. You know, you go into public school, a public school built after 1960 today. And it's probably got concrete walls and tile and metal stairs, treads, and they're enclosed. And of course, the newer schools are probably sprinkled. You know, I haven't been in a school in a long time, but the newer ones are probably sprinkled. They all got fire alarms. We know that, you know, and all that stuff. So, you know, when I was a freshman in college, Tommy, I met my lifelong mentor there, Jim Murtaugh. Jim was a young lieutenant in New York at that time. I went to school in Manhattan. And in my first fire science class, fire science 101, we talked about fire codes. And Jimmy said, you have to understand two things. Number one, the codes in this country are written with blood. He says, and the second thing is we practice tombstone legislation in this United States. And he hasn't been wrong in my last 49 years in the fire service. You know, I heard that when I was 17. He's absolutely right.
It's, you know, closing the barn door after the horse escapes.
It is. So with that being said, I could talk fire history all night. Maybe we'll have a night of historic fires. I was just telling Tommy off the air, I'm starting a new initiative at my job. I'm going to document a fire every month with a little write-up on a fancy letterhead and get it out. I work in the Bureau of Fire Prevention. I want to remind our people what our mission is every chance I get. And don't drop the ball and don't let things fall through the cracks and use your inspector eye and report things. And because we don't want to have those catastrophes of the past, not in New York City and not anywhere else where you work out there in television land. So I hate to start on a down note other than these tragic fires. We lost an EMT in New York City this week. A young guy, 43 years old, had a medical emergency, 22 years on the job. Just want to pay a little homage to Fred Whiteside, our FDNY EMT. And there was something else here that I put down. Give me a second. It was him. And it'll come to me. I didn't make a note on that, but I did want to mention Freddie Whiteside from FDNY EMS. I got a bunch of stuff written down, Tom. You want to kick us off with something some burning issue, like we say?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, I get something under my skin every once in a while, and I try to remain calm. But the shipboard fire that occurred in Port Newark back on July 5th.
I knew that was coming, buddy. Go ahead.
You take a look at the advanced New Jersey media stories on that?
Yes, I have. I read them.
I knew that, you know, Newark had probably become more complacent than they should have in doing marine firefighting stuff, even though the port is under their jurisdiction. Even though the Port Authority runs that, apparently the only fire protection the Port Authority provides is at the airports. And the ports are left to be protected by their local fire departments, which is great if your local fire department knows how to deal with shipboard firefighting. But the article was kind of an eye-opener for me because it really pointed out how unprepared the fire department was to deal with a major shipboard fire. And of course, Newark is one of our largest ports in the United States. Somebody just kind of dropped the ball. And our good friend Glenn Corbett was quoted in the article a couple times. But, you know, Glenn pointed out that the incident basically completely overwhelmed the fire department. Minimal training just doesn't cut it with dealing with that kind of stuff. And, of course, the city had no written plan on how to deal with a fire of that magnitude on a ship. There was a firehouse set down there in the port on Doremus Avenue. I think it was Engine 32. That got closed in 1983 and had never reopened. So you had an empty firehouse sitting down there. The National Transportation Safety folks, who were part of the investigation, issued a warning two years prior to this fire about some of the inherent hazards of the way they store vehicles on those ships. And that one was on its way down to, I think it was West Africa, with what they basically said were junk vehicles. But it kind of reminded me of the Southwest supermarket fire in Phoenix that occurred many years ago, where Brett Tarver lost his life. And Phoenix was pretty transparent about the fact that they were employing residential fire tactics in a commercial building.
Well, I heard that from Brunicini himself.
Yeah. Well,
Brunicini actually said that publicly.
Here's another kind of eye opener. You don't want to use residential fire tactics on a shipboard fire either, because apparently things are not going to go well. You got two firefighters that became disoriented, got off the line. We've seen that happen in the past in commercial buildings and even in some residential structures. But the early reports are that there was a car fire that started this whole mess out in an area where hundreds of other vehicles were stored. And, of course, with all great tragedies, the finger pointing has started. The American Maritime Services is the company who was responsible for loading cars on that ship. And they've already been in court a couple times on this incident, dealing with some evidentiary issues. And they've already said that, hey, in our court proceeding, we are pointing out that the Newark Fire Department is going to be involved in litigation on this. So they're coming after the fire department. Right, wrong, or indifferent. And one of the other kind of contributing factors, or at least what kind of jumped out at me, was there was fixed fire protection on the ship, but we run into an issue of the threads on the ship were certainly not national standard, and they had a lot of time probably spent trying to figure out where couplings, adapters, and other things were that they probably shouldn't even have messed with. There's been other fire departments with maritime experience that said, we don't even mess with the onboard stuff. We're bringing our own hoses with us.
Right.
So they're not dealing with issues like that. But the coordination now that this has passed between the Port Authority and the fire departments, they're starting to say maybe we should pay more attention to this stuff. Well, like in the wake of many great tragedies of, yeah, well, we should have thought that a little bit beforehand. You know, add insult to injury, and I don't know whether it would have made any difference or not, but Newark's fire boat was out of service. for the incident. They ended up relying on you guys, Ron, coming over and assisting in the efforts.
I think the thing that jumped out at me also was Jersey City Fire was called in, and their rescue company found one of the guys, and one of our rescue companies found another guy. You know, so they went in there and they found them, which thank goodness they found them at least.
Augie Ackerman and Bear Brooks, two guys from Newark that lost their lives in this tragedy, and the lessons learned. It kind of struck me as weird, but you know, I don't have a lot of maritime stuff out in our neck of the woods. But I would have assumed that NIOSH would have been involved in the investigation of the line of duty deaths. But it looks like the Coast Guard and the NTSB are actually heading up the investigations, which, you know, not being familiar with either one of those entities' investigation prowess, I am curious as to what their fire experience is and whether they'll be able to put that to work and try and determine responsibilities.
Well, I think the Coast Guard is going to have a better handle on that side of it because they're all shipboard firefighters themselves, you know, and they learn to fight fire aboard ship because they're out there in the middle of nowhere themselves, just like the Navy guys. You know, you got hull technicians and you got Navy firefighters that are on board. Even I think we've talked about the sub fire that happened up in Maine a couple of years back when I was working in Connecticut. I was near the Groton sub base and had some extensive talks with the chief at the Groton sub base, Tommy Clapsaddle. And he said they're not trained. The base fire departments aren't trained to go on the submarines. The ship's forces fight the fire, even if it's in port. Even if it's in port, the ship's forces fight the fire. The base fire department goes down there. They do water supply. If they say, we need another 30 CO2 extinguishers, they get them those. But they don't go on a ship. And the guys up in Maine, when they had the sub fire, they didn't go on a ship. The base fire department told the two-star admiral who was jumping up and down and doing cartwheels on the pier, I'm not putting my men on that boat. Chief stood up to him. But his people were not trained. He said, I'm not killing somebody tonight. I'm not doing it. So he kind of – and he was right. At the end of the day, he was right. So – We look at the Newark fire we're not beating up on the Newark Fire Department. We never do that here. We look at the situation and we look at, you know, the investigation will play out, you know, keep our guns holstered and all that stuff. But you have to believe that, again, you're protecting one of the largest ports in the United States. And how are you not prepared for that? You know, it came out almost that night when they were on television, the chief and his deputies. And he said, I don't know how much prepared we were for this. You know, it's like, wow, there it is. You know, so you know what? We talk about other things. We talk about other things like this. Everybody and their cousin, brother-in-law, sister-in-law, grandma, grandpa, everybody in the fire service and all their relatives, okay, in the last 25 years have bought a brand new pumper with a 60-gallon foam cell on it, okay? I will tell you, a 9,000-gallon tank of gasoline on its side burning in the middle of town, that 60-gallon foam cell probably ain't going to do it. But how often do we practice foam operations? We don't. You know, what's his name? Gordon Graham talks about the low-frequency, high-consequence events. They don't happen that often, but when they happen, like a plane crash. Okay, so who are the guys that do plane crash? Well, the guys that are in or around an airport have probably a little bit of plane crash stuff. Everybody in the country should be practicing for a – don't tell me an airplane can't come down in the middle of Farmington, New Mexico. Of course it can. It can come down right here in Westchester. A plane – and we got a major airport, Westchester Airport. So if we say we're not near the air, it doesn't matter. Planes come out of the sky everywhere, you know. So those are the things sometimes we got to look at and say, maybe we should have something on this, you know, and it's a little bit out of the box for some people. You know, I put some of this stuff because I'm a student, I'm a perpetual student and I'm a reader. I put it in front of my firefighters, you know, when I was my last command in Connecticut, and they look at me like, what are you talking about? And I said, how often we practice with foam? I says, look outside on the highway. So we're right on Route 7 here. I said, the tankers are running up and down all day long. All day. We're prepared for that? We're ready? You're telling me we're ready for that? I don't think we are. You know, so we got foam operations put on. I got foam operations put onto the annual training thing at least once a year, you know, and let's make foam and let's see how many outlets we can get it out of and how effective it is and all that stuff. So
it's, you know, the article pointed out that they didn't have a lot of incidents at the port, which is a good thing. But
it is a good thing.
The complacency monster shows up again and bites you on the ass. And
it happened here.
Yeah.
I agree. Because it's like, well, you know, it's like, you know, we talk about this with high rise all the time. And we've had some dynamite high rise discussions in the last couple of months, haven't we, Tom?
Oh yeah.
Two of the three authors of the new high rise book that's out, you know, The Vertical Challenge, Jack Murphy and Jerry Tracy. Jerry was live 2 weeks ago at the High Rise Fire Safety Directors Conference in Brooklyn. I got to see him do some of his act. Boy, let me tell you something. You want to treat yourself, go to a class when Jerry Tracy's teaching. Boy, I tell you, he's got a lot of energy, that guy. I want to have his energy at his age. And really understands and knows his shit also. I mean, the guy's, he's just a pro up and down. So look at high rises, you know, and that's why I ask guys all the time, you know, I got a basic high rise 101 class that I do, and guys that have high rises, even when I teach that class, I do it in New Jersey 4 or 5 times a year. I'm doing one next week for a fire department. And I say, when's the last time you went out to one of your high rises and tried the red fire phones? Just pick up the red phone in the panel. I take one of the phones with the jacks, go up to the 25th floor or the 15th floor, plug it in, and just test it. Jerry tells a great story. Jerry tells a great story when he's a battalion chief in Midtown, or he's a captain in Midtown. They go on a call to a high-rise building. He takes his standard key and puts it in to put the elevators in phase one just to see if they'll come down. Doesn't work. He gets a hold of the building guy, the fire safety director. He says, my key is not pulling us down. Try your key. He puts it in. It's not working. You know how? Well, know what the investigation showed? There are contractors that go around to the fancy high rises and polish all the brass, okay? And there's some sort of a corrosive in there, and they're going over the keyhole, and it ate up the tumblers inside the lock.
Wow!
Wow! You're not kidding! Wow! Wow! So he said the moral of his story is, if you don't go out and try this shit, it might not work when you need it. And he found that just, you know, they went on a run and it's not working. Yeah, well, guess what happened? And so through investigation, they found out that was the case. So you got to get out. I always, you know, how many of you tried the fire phones? No hands go up. How many of you been to the building to see where the fire pump is in the basement to try to know how to turn it on? No hands go up. This is time after time after time. I said, do you guys think that you're going to pull this off at 2 o'clock in the afternoon with 3,000 people in that high-rise building with a fire on the 20th floor and just wing it? You can't wing it. It doesn't work that way.
No.
So, you know, the ship fire in Newark and a gasoline tanker and a high-rise building, these are all of these, low frequency, high consequence. Look what happened. We lost two guys in Newark on a boat. So all these things, when they happen, they got to be a wake-up call. And that's kind of our preach. You know, Tommy, you and I, that's our preach, especially here on this forum, on our show, is you got to pay attention to what's going on around you. And you got to, like Tommy always says, I can quote him, heed the lessons learned.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't, if you have a port or even a marina, after that fire in Newark, you should all been down at your ports and marinas looking around saying, okay, where's the water supply? Can we make foam here? How are we going to operate on a boat? I mean, whatever. We had a fire one night when I was the chief in my last command in Connecticut. We got called into the city of Norwich, and they have something called Three Rivers. Three Rivers actually come together, and there's a marina downtown, and the water down there is treacherous because these three rivers are coming together, and it's like Hellgate in Manhattan. It's just, you fall in there, we'll never see you again, right? So the guy said they had a boat fire. So we went and we stood by kind of like a fast team. Okay, even though we weren't going to, you know, if the guys got trapped in a boat, my guys probably would have went on to try to get him out. But they came back and they said, you know what, Chief, we were looking at the water, the way it's swirling, the way it's rushing. If one of our guys falls in there, it's over. So I got a hold of the chief, Chief Kenny Scan, and we had a meeting. And I said, what do you do for your guys? I mean, are they wearing, if they go out on a dock, once you go past the land end and you could fall in the water, are they wearing PFDs? And he said, no. I said, well, let's take a look at this together. So we looked at it and I bought, if you watch Deadliest Catch, you'll see the guys wearing them. It almost looks like a horse collar. It looks like a round thing, but that's actually a life jacket. It's very thin, very unobtrusive, so they can work. But if they pull the thing, it'll keep the head above the water. So I bought them for my guys. I said, if you respond down to the dock for a fire in the city, just put them on over your turnout coat. It'll keep, if you fall in, it'll keep your head above the water so you can breathe. You know, and then we went to do further testing. As you know, I was at the Mohegan Sun. This is when I was up at Mohegan that this thing happened with the Three Rivers. After we were looking at the life preservers, we started to investigate, can you float in your turnout gear? Because I remember as a young Boy Scout, I had to take my life-saving merit badge. Part of it was we used to go into the pool or into the lake with our uniform on, our scout uniform, button the top button, open the second button, and blow into your shirt, and your shirt would blow up. And it was a built-in life preserver. And then you take your pants off while you're treading water, tie a knot in the legs, and throw it over your head and slap the water. Boom! And then that would go up, and you could stick that around your neck. So I learned all of these kind of, you know, life-saving techniques for yourself. I said, well, what happens with turnout gear? So being we were working in a resort, I got the indoor pool for 11 o'clock at night one night when it was closed to the people. And we went down there with turnout gear. And I put two guys in there with bathing suits as the safety team. And then we had guys going in with their gear on in the deep end to see if they could float. And the answer, even with boots on and everything, full turnout gear, one guy with a bottle, one without. We did it without the bottle mostly. And it turns out when you hit the water, your gear kind of puffs up and there's air in it because you have air inside. If you fight, you'll get the air out and you're going, shh. But if you stay calm, I had guys floating 15, 20 minutes as long as they stayed calm in the water. So, you know, all these little, when it surfaces, when something comes up and somebody asks a question, it's like, if you don't do anything about it, shame on you. You know, you got it. So we learned that turnout gear will help us float for a little while, you know, and you can get an unobtrusive collar, not to wear to every job, but you're going down to the water, pull them out of the compartment, slip them on, clip them on. God forbid you fall in, pull a string, you know, and all these other things, you know. But I teach you how to stay afloat now, blowing into your shirt, buddy. First time you heard that.
I'm going to make a note.
You know you're hanging out with an old Eagle Scout, right? So, you yeah. know, some stuff I just, you know, it stays with you, you know.
You and Rick Mason are my two favorite Eagle Scouts.
Yes. Yes, yes. I know Rick Mason's part of the club, and so is Ron Sarnicky, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, Ronnie's he was actually, I think, awarded the Distinguished Eagle Award in recent years for all his life's work by the Boy Scouts of America. Yes. Yeah, so, that's a little bit of bragging rights being an Eagle Scout. It was, for a 17-year-old kid, it was a pretty big thing, you know. But certain things you don't forget because, you know, we did like we just do knots. That's all we did, knots. We did speed knots. We had a guy that can make 9 knots in 29 seconds. And some of them were like, you know, you need a post, like a half hitch, three quarter hitch, clove hitch. He'd use his legs. He'd be tying them on his legs, bending down. Like he was an older guy. You know, he was like in his 40s, but he could do 9 knots in 30 seconds. It's just some of that stuff stays with you, you know.
The honor of teaching part of the latest Farmington recruit class at the college. And I like talking to the young guys. And I tried to impart on them some of the wisdom you imparted on me, was that fire prevention is really the base of firefighter safety. And a lot of them were like, well, you know, we never really thought of it like that. I said, but if you really think about it, and I harp on them about pre-planning, I said, you got to know your district. I said, you could look at downtown Farmington, which is pretty much 30s, 40s style construction. I said, who can tell me which buildings have the tie rods in them that are holding the building together? Well, how do we do that? I said, you look on the outside of the building. I said, how many of you know there's a block in downtown Farmington that looks like it's probably six or seven different occupancies that all have a common basement? Unless you're out there looking for that stuff, you ain't going to find it. And it's really not written down as well as it should be for us to be able to pull that up on a pre-plan and say, yeah, you got a basement job in here. Yeah, you might as well start the resource festival because this thing will go into the ground.
And that's kind of thing I've been preaching for a long time, you know, and I think it's because my roots started in fire prevention. Then I went on a line for 30 years, but I carried that with me, you know, and trying to convince firefighters it's in their own best interest to get out and do fire prevention work. And listen, if there's no fires, you're going to be bored, but nobody gets hurt. Nobody gets hurt or killed when there's no fires.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a good thing, you know, so that kind of stuff. So I saw something interesting, Tom. They had a car bomb explosion at the Niagara Falls, the Canada-New York crossing.
Really?
Today or yesterday, yeah. They're thinking it was terrorism, too. Two people dead. The two people in the car are dead. The bomb went off right when they were in that toll booth, you know, where you go through customs kind of thing. And, the car just exploded out of nowhere. It came up really fast and blew up right under that little tunnel there. So they're thinking it was an act of terrorism.
Which side did it come from, do you know?
Yeah, Canada into U.S.
Okay.
Yeah, Canada into U.S. So, that was an interesting thing to popped off the screen. I mean, it's like, oh, wow. Not again.
I had heard that the threat level's up in the city.
Big time.
With the parade.
Yeah. Yeah, big time. It's been up really since October 7th, since Israel went into Palestine and the whole thing started in the Middle East again. So it's been up for everything. There was one morning I was going into Brooklyn from home, going to headquarters and coming down the West Side Highway. And there's a cop car like on every other corner and lights going and everything. And it's not a lot of traffic that time of the day. And I said, I know the president's not in town. Usually when the president's in town, they're lined up getting ready to shut off streets and all that. And there was just something going on, man. I mean, just, you know, we're in that thing again with the Middle East thing. I don't necessarily want to get to that, but the city is, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on in the city. There's the mayor's campaign manager got raided by the FBI. They took his telephone. There's all kinds of stuff going on. And there's stuff involving the fire department that I can't even talk about, you know. But so it's just, it's churning. New York City's churning right now, and hopefully everything comes out okay and we can move on with our lives. Picked up on a really good article in fireengineering.com. I don't know if you saw it, Tommy. It's called, I think I have it down here. It's about, we have to bring laughter back to the firehouse again. Did you see that?
No, I haven't seen it, but I got a point to make with you after you talk about it.
Yeah, Stephanie Wright wrote an article about bringing laughter back. And it was nice because at the head of the article, there's like three or four different pictures, collages of like firemen just like hysterical, patting each other on the back, laughing at a job or in the firehouse. And she talks about that because of the way society is today, that we're losing our laughter in the firehouse. You know, everybody's afraid to crack a joke, you know, and she said she misses it too. You know, she could give it out as much as she can get it being in the firehouse. She says, I miss it. She says, the firehouse is getting very serious. It's quiet. It's not what it used to be. And she thought that's a big morale thing, you know, and a big feel good thing and a release to have those kinds of laughs when you're busting each other's chops and breaking balls and all that other stuff. She wrote a really cool article about that. We're doing an initiative now in the city for the fire department on the leadership tied into, diversity, inclusion, and tied into a non-hostile work environment, and tied it to leadership, and tied it to. So we've been working on this thing for months, and hopefully we're going to get it on the road next quarter. But I sent it to some of the bosses for that. I said, take a look at this. You know, while we're trying to rein people in from that old style of, you know, just calling everybody by their racial name as a joke, you know, and all that stuff. And God, we all heard that our whole careers. And now it's unacceptable. Society says that's not right. So, okay. So we have to change what society wants. But she talks about that the left is going away in the firehouse. I recommend you all read. It's online. It's right on fireengineering.com. I think it's still on the front page. It's still posted up there. It's by Stephanie White. She does a lot of writing for the mag. And she makes a great point. I think she just makes a great point.
I got my good friend and was an engineer here in Farmington for 35 years. Probably the longest serving guy in the department, Steve Guattery. Steve came out of Middletown, New York. And came over with a number of guys from the department there, but he was the one that coined the expression that working at the firehouse is like being in 13th grade.
I never heard that. That's good.
It made sense. So
13th grade.
A month or so ago, I was down in Galveston, Texas, teaching one of the two-day National Fire Academy courses. And they just built a headquarters station a couple of years ago, and a beautiful building. And the assistant chief and I got to chatting, and he said they had a lot of input from the union as to living quarters. And the guy said, we don't want individual bedrooms. We want to go back to the common dorm, which warms the cockles of my heart. For, you know, the time I spent in the sleeping quarters, some of the shenanigans that were going on with that type of living. But it's been my observation, right, wrong, or indifferent, that if they've got their own rooms to go hide in, the guys weren't eating together, the guys weren't hanging out watching TV at night, a lot of the camaraderie had kind of disappeared when everybody kind of went through their own corner. But it made me feel really good to see somebody recognize that, you know what, let's go back to this. It's a good thing.
For the first time I came across that, I did a 3-day gig in Bloomington, Indiana, and probably 15 years ago. The chief from Bloomington was in my session at FDIC, came up to me and said, you're coming to Bloomington. My people have to hear this. It was leadership. So 3 days. And I got in the night before late, and then so the next day we're off to the races. So as it wound down at 3-4 o'clock, he says, we just built the brand new headquarters station, same thing, etc. So come on over. So I went over to see it, and basically all the companies were in my class, in service guys. So they all said, yeah, chief, come on over, see the new house. Beautiful quarters. I mean, absolutely. I couldn't even. I spent 3 hours telling you how beautiful this firehouse was. But it was 15 years ago. It was brand new, and they did the individual bedrooms. And the young guys loved it, and the old timers hated it. Because I said to them, I said, "Why, you guys have got individual rooms? You got privacy?" And the old timers, we was having coffee in the kitchen at about, I guess, 4:30 or whatever. And the two senior guys said, "It's horrible." They said, back in the day, you sat in the day room together, or if you went in the bunk room, everybody was together, and you could have banter, and you can have chatting, and blah, 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 till somebody in the bunk room yelled, all right, it's 12 o'clock, shut the fuck up, it's time to go to bed, you know? So we should usually see the guy, right? But he said, the young people in the firehouse now, he says, any time they have that's off, that they're not training on a run, cleaning, whatever, if it's their own time, they shoot to their little private bedroom and shut the door. And they're on their phones or they're on their laptops. They said, you know, if we happen to be, it's a double house. So yeah. He says, I'm with the senior guy in the engine in the truck. He says, so it's just the two of us now. He says, now we're buddies. We like each other. But that whole, that group camaraderie, all that was gone. And the senior guys didn't like it at all, you know? And so, So to hear that, how recent is that, Tommy?
I'm trying to think.
How old's the firehouse?
I'm going to say it's probably 2 or 3 years old. Beautiful quarters. And I mean, I had a great time out there. They took really good care of me. And that was my first time on the Gulf Coast. Thankfully, the hurricane didn't show up. And
yeah, no kidding, because it usually does.
But it was it made me feel good that somebody else has recognized that and said, let's just go back to the way it was.
Absolutely, because I there's something to be said for that, and that's kind of going away. And you know, we're having a lot of we've been meeting since March on this leadership initiative, and some of the discussions we've had, you know, we're talking about like inclusion. You know, everybody needs to be included, and I agree, because I told them, I said, when I was hanging around a firehouse in the 70s and going to college in the 70s, the biggest brag about the New York City Fire Department, which probably held for every fire department in the country, was you can walk into any firehouse and you can get anything done and you can get any question answered. You'll find an auto mechanic. You'll find an electrician. You'll find a carpenter. You'll find a shithouse lawyer. You'll find a financial consultant. No doubt about that, right? So to me, I don't know how that went away, but that was something that the department prided itself on. Like we got one of everything. There's nothing we can't do with this crew in this firehouse, you know? Well, and so it's a little different today. You know, you have people from all over the world coming to New York and becoming firefighters. Okay, so the food's a little bit different. Well, let's try it. I never had that kind of food. Let's give it a shot. What the hell? You know, but if you don't take advantage of that, you know, then you're shortchanging yourself, you know?
I've had the honor to travel all over the United States teaching firefighters. And the one thing that I was always so just amazed by, that I have never walked into a firehouse and not been offered either a meal or someplace to sleep. And that kind of camaraderie, I think, is still there, but you got to make sure that tradition continues.
Yeah, I agree. And I've bragged that. I've boasted that with non-fire people, you know, with relatives, and it's Christmas time or whatever. You're visiting tomorrow. We're going to go eat ourselves silly. And I told the people that worked the other day on an email, I said, have a happy Thanksgiving. I said, lucky for me, I've been overeating for 3 weeks, warming up for Thursday, so it doesn't hurt too much. I've been practicing. So you get together with family, and when I talk about it, I look them all in the eye. I said, there's no other occupation in the world where you can walk into a place of the same business on the other side of the world and be welcomed with open arms and get a meal, a cup of coffee, or a bed, like you just said. I said, accountants can't do that. Cops can't do it. The teachers can't do it. We can do it. Walk into a firehouse anywhere, especially in this country. Oh, show your shield and your ID. Say, listen, I'm out of money. I need a place to sleep. I'm starving to death. You know, whatever. And they'll take you in. They'll just take you in. I tell a great story about our good friend Chief McGrath, who we talked about last month, who passed away. When he was the chief in Raleigh, North Carolina, he was visiting a firehouse at night for dinner when he first got there. And at the same time, there was a knock on the door, and two college girls. There's a couple of big universities in and around Raleigh. And they come in and they say, you know, we're stuck. So all of a sudden, you know, there's two college girls on the floor, and all of a sudden there's 20 firefighters on the floor with them, right? So John's sitting in the kitchen by himself saying, like, what the hell happened here? So he goes out, and he puts two and two together, and one of them's crying. One of the girls is crying. So he walks over and takes charge, and like he always did, and he said, what's the matter? She said, my father's a firefighter in wherever she was from, Wisconsin or Nebraska. He said, if I was ever in trouble, come to the nearest firehouse. He said, what's the matter? She said, my car is dead. It's 2 blocks away. So he said, first thing he said was, who's the mechanic in the house? 3 guys raised their hand. He says, go look at this girl's car. Let's figure out what's wrong with it. They came back. It's her alternator. Took out his credit card, gave it to the guys, and said, take the rig, go to an auto parts store, go get an alternator, buy it with my card. And she's saying, I have no money. He goes, your father will send me a check. I'm not worried. He said, and the guys put the alternator in. It took him an hour. Got to take the belts off, put the He says, she was on her way. I gave him my information. He says, 3 weeks later, I got a check and a very nice thank you note from Dad. He said, but that's us. That's us. It doesn't happen everywhere with every occupation. And when I say occupation, that's career and volunteer together. You're a firefighter, you're a fighter. Okay. You know, Tommy, for me, I always say the stones in Emmitsburg doesn't say that you were paid or not.
No.
You know, the names on the roster in Emmitsburg don't have paid or volunteer. Those guys died no matter what. They died on the job, so doesn't matter. So we're blessed. We've been part of this our whole lives.
It was always been one of my favorite stories of I worked with a guy here in Farmington named Richard Smith. His brother was on the job in New York City, I think in the Marine Division, in fact. But Rich ended up getting hired, left Farmington, went to FDNY. And we had kept in contact. God rest his soul. He had died shortly after 9/11. But I'm back in Jersey visiting my family. And I called Richie. I was like, can I come by? He says, yeah. And at the time, he was at the PASA, the Pride of Sheffield Avenue, at the truck company there. He says, you want to come over and ride? I said, what do you think? So I end up going over there and spending the night. And true to form, they had a roving lieutenant in that was working. And he looked at me and said, you know, I haven't had this much sleep in 15 years. Can you come back tonight?
That happened to me too. But it happened to me too.
Great times.
Yeah. Yeah. I went up right before Jimmy Murtaugh retired. He was in the 7th Division in the Bronx, the occupied North Bronx, right? Had the best night's sleep we ever had, along with the engine and truck in the same house. We came down for coffee at 6 o'clock. The fireman was sitting around a table like this. Yo, Jersey Chief, you come back anytime you want, Jersey Chief. We love you. Okay, I'll be back. Yeah, same thing for me. Couldn't catch shit. Oh, my God. So I picked up something on the net today. Three of our fire hero families, three widows of three firefighters who were killed in the last 2 or 3 years, got together. And they've been pretty vocal lately. And one of them is Josh Laird's wife from Frederick. And the other is, I can't remember, I apologize for that. But it was a recent line of duty where this corrugated stainless steel tubing for natural gas.
CSST.
The lightning hit the house.
It's
CSST. Yeah, lightning hit the house. And as a result, they lost their husbands and stuff. So there's three of them. But they actually, I wanted to let our viewing audience know that they set up something called Phoenix Advocates. They're 501c3. They have a website. And they're basically, it's about a firefighter safety and lessons learned and how what happened to their husbands and how they want to help other family members, wives and widows and stuff. So, you know, kudos to these ladies for having the strength to pick themselves up and you know, and pull up their bootstraps, so to speak, and do something good. It's called Phoenix Advocates. And again, it was a result of the CSST fires that their husband succumbed to. So I wanted to mention that and give them a little bit of a plug. Speaking of hazardous materials, the lithium-ion battery saga still is plaguing us in New York. We had a triple fatality last weekend in Brooklyn. So we're 17 fatalities this year from lithium ion batteries. It's not getting any better. It's probably going to get worse. But we're doing everything we can. We recently had a symposium. Yeah, I'll let you write in, Tom, but we had a symposium recently. We invited in the insurance industry. We said, hey, how are you handling this? You know, are you paying claims to building owners that are burning down their buildings with illegal batteries and that kind of, so we got them thinking about it too. So we're doing everything we can. There's PSAs going on TV. If you watch the local stations here in New York, you'll see FDNY PSAs. We got good footage of burning scooters and bikes and don't store them in your house and blah, blah, blah. You know, we got shelters up now. We got 150,000 migrants that they're putting up these 10 cities all over the city. They got bikes and scooters too. They got work delivering food to some of these folks. So they got bikes, and you can't bring them in the tent. So they're not. But we know they're probably yanking the battery off and taking it inside with them. So there's a whole host of problems that we're dealing with, you know.
And
Tommy.
I don't consider myself to be well-versed in some of that stuff, but in my thought process, it looks like there's two big issues. One is the illegal batteries, and the second one is chargers that were not meant for the battery that's in there. That kind of close.
Yeah, you're spot on. And not only that, somebody showed us online where you can buy this device. So you put the charger in the wall, you plug it in, then you plug the charger into this box, and then the box to the battery. The box is a rapid charger. It's pulling more juice out of the wall from the charger so you can charge the bike faster. So those are all, that's another nemesis. And at the end of the day, like I said, it's going to get worse before it gets better. There was a guy set up a cabinet outside his house. You pull up, you swipe your credit card, you put your battery into the charger, you open up the door, take a fresh battery, stick it in the bike, keep going. I mean, people are going into business like crazy. So when we find a business with apartments above that's all illegal, we vacate the building. It's a vacate. Because that was the Chinatown fire we had a couple of months ago that killed four people. So if it's just a row of stores, if it's just a taxpayer, we write them up, we call hazmat, we take all the stock and all the batteries. The other thing, we're working with UL. UL's great. We just had them. We got a probie class of inspectors in now. They're in their 14-week academy. And we had the guys from UL come and talk to them. Bogus UL labels. They're printing.
Really?
They're printing. Yes. So they're taking these reconditioned batteries and putting this label on with the UL in the circle. And currently, the dead giveaway is the writing under the UL thing. Most of the English is very, very bad. You know, like this size battery, SISE, that kind of stuff, you know, just a lot of typos. But yeah, bogus UL labels, we're running into that now too.
Wow.
So yeah, UL is all over. And they've been a great partner with us. They came to that symposium with the insurance industry. And again, we had them at the academy last Monday for our inspectors class so they can give them an awareness of what to look for. So It's still an issue, and it's going to be an issue for a while longer. We do not see the light at the end of the tunnel yet. The fire commissioner, she kind of called out. She called out Amazon and who else? Walmart called them out on TV last week and said, "Stop selling these knockoff batteries to the people in New York City." She says, "I'm holding you responsible. Amazon, stop shipping bad batteries." She told us. So she called out the two biggest retailers in the United States. But we don't know what else to do. We're killing people. We're killing people in the city. You know, one of the things that I heard recently that really hadn't struck me, I was at a meeting, and the chief of department was in the meeting, and the chief of operations, Chief Hodges and Chief Esposito, and they said, the fires are so fast and so fierce coming off those batteries that, you know, we do a rope rescue about once every 10 years. We did two in 4 months in the middle of the day, not even at night.
Wow.
Middle of the day. If you've seen the national news, okay, everybody's seen the rope rescues this year. There was two of them. One was in, I think, the Bronx, and one was in Queens or Manhattan and Brooklyn or whatever. But two rope rescues in the middle of the day in the side of 3 or 4 months. That's nuts. That's nuts because the people are getting trapped in the house, you know, so – we're doing everything we can, public education, commercials on TV, you name it, you know, but it's something that, like I said, we're in the middle of it, and it's not great. So,
Ron, did you by chance see the Fairfax, Virginia smoke explosion that was up on close calls?
Was that the one that the firefighter, he opens up like a back door, looks like a factory or a taxpayer or something, and then boom.
Yeah.
You come out. Yeah, I saw that. I did see that.
Apparently that fire started on the outside of the building and extended in. And they're still not quite sure what occurred. Was it a backdraft? Was it a smoke explosion? Trying to get down into the nitty-gritty of it. But Chief Butler over there in Fairfax, he has always been very kind to you and I for sending the Fairfax team over for Memorial Weekend.
Absolutely.
And, yep. I liked the way they wrote it up, because they wrote it up as not a lessons learned fire. It was more of a lessons reinforced. And they came up with kind of a laundry list that I was going to share with you. The one thing, and it makes perfectly good sense, you and I have probably talked about it here a couple times, is treat every call as what's going to be the biggest call of your career and be prepared to deal with that. Wear your PPE properly. Never let the complacency creep in and overshadow the need to be professional. Don't forget that the fundamentals are essential. And the fire always gets a vote.
I like that one.
Never be too proud to request help and keep your ego in check. And everything we do is being recorded. So just some reinforced lessons there from our friends over at Fairfax, Virginia.
Yeah, well, that was I read that and I said that just well done. It's to the point, and you know what? If you looked at those like once a month, like on the first of the month, you pay your rent, you pay your electric bill, and you read those, it'll probably keep you on your game better.
Yeah,
you know, and hang it up in the firehouse under a frame, you know, that kind of stuff. So yeah,
good. Actually,
stuff.
I'm sure you've discovered that if you want the boys to read something important, tack it up in front of the urinal.
Yes. Yes. We've had urinary bulletins. I wanted to call them those. When I was my last job, I wanted to call it urinary bulletin and put, you know, but they stopped me, you know, and like, you know, you put one on the inside of the door in a commode, you know, to call it like a no shit bulletin or a no shit situation or something, you know, but I had to stop. I had to show a little bit of decorum anyway, you know, not a lot, but a little bit. So what could I tell you? But well, Tom, it's about an hour. We're kind of winding down here. I'm not sure if there's anything else
to bring up. I've got the roll when you're ready.
I think we're ready. So go ahead. I know Chicago's having a real bad year. Mohawk goes out to those guys right off the bat. But go ahead, Tommy. Why don't you read the roll for tonight?
You know, the last time we were on the air was October 30th. And I got to tell you, it's surprising that we've only had four line of duty deaths since we were last on the air. It's still bad, but it's better than it has been.
But I hold my breath every December, because we know December is traditionally a horrendous time of the year. So we'll hold our breath this year too. But go ahead, Tom. Let's hear what you got.
On October 30th, Joseph Back from Whitesburg, Kentucky, made the supreme sacrifice, suffering a heart attack at a scene. David Phelps from Terre Haute, Indiana, on November 2nd, also a heart attack on the scene. Thomas Peshkai from Crestwood, Kentucky, on the 11th of November, a heart attack on the scene. And Andrew Price from Chicago, as Ron had just mentioned, fell through a skylight shaft at a structure fire, and that occurred back on November 13th. And as always, we ask, heed the lessons. We got to learn from what those who went before us have presented, and try to operate as safely and effectively as possible. Also, keep their families and loved ones in your thoughts and prayers.
You know, a good friend, Frank Leap, who we're going to see in January on this show, when he was chief of training, and now he's chief of safety. So it was a great spot to go from one to the next. But he started these kind of like what I'm doing with the historic fires and fire prevention, but he did historic fires that led to line of duty deaths of New York City firemen. And they would do a special department order. And they say, you know, in 1928, these three guys got killed, and with the lessons learned. So he just constantly, because if you think about the turnover, especially in our job, you know, with you know, 100 retirements a month and then a new probie. We got a probie class in place now, Tom, 355 kids in one class.
Wow.
Yeah, it's mayhem at the Rock right now. Absolute mayhem. But look, it's controlled chaos is what it is, you know. But so that constant turnover of people, and you want the young people, you want the young foot to come in and read those and say, you know, this happened in, you know, even like we have our subway simulator at the Rock. It's very, very cool. We have two subway cars on tracks with a platform. When you walk in that building, you're on a subway station. And they train in there, rescue trains in there, EMS has tech trains in there. They'll jack up, they'll put a mannequin in between the platform and the car, and they'll get the mannequin out. You know, all the stuff that really happens in New York City, you know. So, but that train station is named after a fireman who got electrocuted in 1972.
Wow.
A guy named, I think it's Perugia, if I'm not mistaken. And it's called the Perugia Station. They got it all dolled up like a regular station. So Frank started these bulletins, and you as you get them, you read, and not just the big fire, not just the 23rd Street fire or what, but you know, the everyday stuff where guys have gotten killed over the years as a reminder, you know, heed the lessons learned, read what happened to this guy. And this is why we changed. This is why we do this procedure now, because this happened to that guy. So it's good stuff. So while I'm mentioning Frank Lee, before we sign off for the night, folks, as you know, tonight we're airing on December 4th here in this particular show. But our January show, date to be determined, is going to coincide with the January issue of Fire Engineering Magazine, which annually and traditionally is the fire prevention and protection issue. And we're going to have two giants from New York City, Chief Joe Jordan and Chief Frank Lieb. They have extensive backgrounds and stacks of resumes. Both served as volunteers. Both have been on the job over 30 years in New York City. Both served as chief of safety. Jordan was chief of fire prevention. We're going to be talking about how fire prevention, fire protection, inspections, code, and firefighter health and safety are all tied together. And you get a chance to hear it from these luminaries, because these guys have been there and done that a couple of times. Probably got every T-shirt and every color. So we're looking forward to our January show, like we look forward to our monthly show anyway, with Chief Jordan and Chief Lieb. So stay tuned. Being this is the first week in December, I don't want to speak for Tom, but we want to wish everybody a happy, healthy holiday season, a happy new year. Stay with it. Don't get complacent. We talked about complacency a lot tonight. Don't let complacency creep in. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. Wear your gear. Wear your seatbelt. Slow down. Use your head. Stop for red. I sound like I'm signing off, right, Tommy? But do all the good things. And a side note to that, I was in a class 3 weeks ago at the Rock for a week. It was 5 days. And I was with all lieutenants and captains, and mostly young guys. Everybody's younger than me at the job. I get it. And the last day, on Friday, I brought in 5 boxes of Entenmann's donuts. You know, the old guy, I got the white shirt on. I said, morning, guys, I brought brain food. It's our last day. We're taking our final. 6 donuts were eaten out of 5 boxes. That was a testament. And it was free to them. You know, if you know, we're firefighters, so everything's free. 6 donuts were missing out of 1 box. I had 4 sealed boxes that never got opened. So that's a real testament to how our people are starting to think today, which I think is terrific. Good for them. Good for them. So with that, again, happy holidays. Happy New Year, everybody. Tommy?
You could have sent me a box.
I will next time, I promise. but I ended up keeping them and putting them out where old timers were like me, and we killed them off, so I ain't worried about that. But the young guys weren't eating them. So with that, we're gonna get ready to sign off. We're gonna bring our producer Mark Howe in, who does a great job with these shows. Mark, thank you as you play our outgoing music. So everybody, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, be safe, stay well, be well. Tom?
Stay safe, word. Everybody.
Breathing in diesel exhaust fumes is like walking into a fire without a mask. Over time, those toxins lead to cancer. Protect yourself with MagnaGrip, the easiest, most reliable exhaust removal system that features a true 100% seal to eliminate diesel exhaust fumes. To get free grant assistance, visit MagnaGrip.com.
The Fire Store, equipping protectors with passion. Every decision the Firestore makes as a company is about its customers. As the holiday season has quickly approached, explore a wide selection of unique and practical gifts at the Firestore's Gift Center. Find the perfect presents for firefighters, EMTs, and first responders today. The Firestore's goal is to get you the gear you need, when you need it, at prices you can afford. Visit thefirestore.com for everything but the truck and shop its family of brands including Streamlight, MSA, Lion, FLIR, and more.